Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Earlier this week, the Tulsa World reported outgoing State Superintendent Janet Barisi created a new assistant superintendent position just so she could hire the husband of her general counsel. The move inspired Republican Representative Jason Smalley, who's running for state senate, to call for the resignation of the three people involved, as well as a hiring freeze for the Department of Ed. Neva, what are your thoughts on this news?
Well, if Janet Barisi gave a puppy to an orphan, I think some of these same folks probably would find something wrong with that. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, Superintendent Barisi was very clear what the position was. The fact that this person had the credentials, both the education credentials, law enforcement credentials, to do the job. And I think a lot of these things have gotten thrown on the table and mixed in just have no merit. So, again, I think it's the piling on of the superintendent, and it makes for good headlines when she is someone who has already been defeated in the election this year and is, trying to pursue what she believes is the proper course in her office and is going to be met, I think, with obstacles every step of the way.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think that, so much for going gracefully into the night. I think the folks over at the website Oklahoma Education Truths have some really good commentary on this. And what their findings I agree with are that this suggests that Janet Barisi is going to be combative to the very end of her tenure as state superintendent. This was a post that was filled without posting it. The person that was hired may have some credentials, but they were essentially placed in a supervisor position over Lynn Jones, who had been the head of accreditation department for 13 months. She was the regional accreditation officer for 8 years prior to that. That's reported by the Tulsa World. She resigned as a result of this, having someone that was being placed as her superior with less credentials than she had. And the investigative background that that this new hire brings to the table, even leaving aside the fact that he's married to the general counsel at the State Department, the investigative credentials, I think, signal that Janet Barisi is going to take a combative gotcha attitude to compliance with accreditation standards, which is totally different than what the department's done in the last several years.
The State Department of Education also entered the news last week when the report cards for state schools were released. According to the report, fewer schools received an A grade and more schools received an F. Ryan, why did this happen?
Yeah, again, our friends over at the website Oklahoma Education Truths do a good job of demonstrating that these A through F grades don't tell us anything other than the fact of what we already know is that schools that serve impoverished areas are going to get lower ratings. The correlation between the A through F performance and poverty is stark. I think that when we're looking at creating data in the education world, that data should give us some tools on how to improve. But what these grades tell us is something that we already know. I'm sure that this won't be the last stab at trying to create some sort of performance measurement in education. Let's just hope in the future that those performance measures are backed up with resources and tools to actually make improvements and not just try to undermine public confidence in schools, teachers, and parents.
Neva?
Well, I mean, I think the folks that have been opposed to A through F from the start continue to be opposed, and I think folks that see the merit of it, which is really, it's a system that is designed all along to empower parents by providing them with something that is an easily understood measurement on how their school is performing. And when you look at these grade cards, these report cards for the 1,800 Oklahoma schools, let's take, for instance, Oklahoma City Public Schools, clearly, I mean, continuing to have difficulty and having many of their schools on the C, D, and F side of the scale. All the Edmond schools fell in the A to B range. You look at the 10 Stillwater schools, you see them with four, including one, an A+, the high school, three Bs, two Cs. So you can make any kind of argument you want, but you need some measurement that shows where you can see the effectiveness and performance of public schools, and I think the grade card has proven to be a good measure, and I think particularly where parents are concerned, it gives them an opportunity to become even more engaged in the process, and the partnership between communities, school boards, schools, patrons, all of that has to be positive. And taking aside, Ryan, your comment on the impoverished schools or in those areas, clearly they have challenges. Clearly they have lower performing grades in many instances. But that doesn't mean you throw out the entire process. just because you see some of these schools failing, which is no surprise to anyone. The bottom line is you want to be able to create a standard and an ability to be able to move forward and help elevate all of these schools through whatever measures necessary.
You know, and I think that standard is worth striving for, but what this standard tells us, if you look at the District of Edmond, you know, 100% of their schools have an A or a B rating on the A through F report card, and their free and reduced lunch population is 26.6% of students. Oklahoma City, 20% of the schools have an A or a B rating, 64% have D or F, and their free or reduced lunch period free or reduced lunch population is 86.4%. So, again, it would be helpful if we had tools for educators and for parents and for policymakers. But what this tool just really tells us is schools that have impoverished populations that they're having to serve, that they have a much more difficult job and fewer resources to tackle.
Well, I think that is a broad brush. I think there can be demonstrated instances where that is not the case. But more importantly, when you look at a quarter of the public schools received a D or an F, not all of them. I mean, some folks try to paint this picture that the reason it's not a good report card system is because it doesn't give any opportunity to see how schools are doing. But I would argue that many of these schools, as they see improvement, for instance, a school that was a D that is now a B, the folks that are involved in that school have to believe that they are seeing some improved performance and some ability to really kind of make their school system better as a result of it.
The State Department of Corrections is working to make recommended changes to the death chamber after the botched execution of Clayton Lockett. The next scheduled execution takes place in November, but now a federal judge is raising concerns Oklahoma won't have the changes in place by then. Neva, is there cause for concern?
Well, I think his point is right. I mean, he basically said that he has a hard time seeing, just from a time frame standpoint, how all of this can be done. And his point is that both sides, in filing their legal papers, indicate that they really want to do the same thing, and that is have a method of administering lethal injections that meets constitutional requirements and avoids mishaps. So I think whether this gets resolved through an independent mediator or some other measure, clearly I think all parties are coming to the table basically wanting a correct resolution on the matter.
Ryan, I know ACLU's been following this closely. Do you agree with this judge that we're not going to be ready in November to start executing inmates?
Absolutely. I think Judge Fried is making a very wise decision here in throwing up some potential roadblocks, not absolute at this point, but some potential roadblocks to resuming executions in November. If you think back, it's not entirely clear how much rushing into the execution of Clayton Lockett led to botched execution in that case. But certainly moving forward with haste and not knowing all of the facts created a situation in which the government essentially treated Clayton Lockett like a human guinea pig and they experimented on him. We can't do that with these new protocols. These new protocols need to be tested. Folks need to be trained, and it's hard to imagine how we get there before then. Judge Fried recognized that one of the few things that we have absolute control over in this entire process is timing, and the state can control that by seeking a stay of those executions, and I would be surprised if they don't seek the stay if Judge Fried doesn't impose one.
And I think that's probably true, given the fact that we're looking at November 13th as the next scheduled execution.
Yeah.
Now, an Oklahoma County judge has ruled the Ten Commandments monument on the northeast corner of the state capitol can stay. The ACLU, which brought a constitutional challenge to the display, is promising to appeal the decision. Ryan, what was the judge's basis for this ruling?
Yeah, I think that the judge was looking at a prior case that upheld the placement of a large cross on the state fairgrounds park. You know, in that case, that's several decades old. The court reasoned that the cross was open to symbolic interpretation that didn't necessarily lend itself to a religious interpretation. I think that the Ten Commandments monument is very distinguishable from that. Here you have clear, express text on the monument itself. And essentially, I think that our case, and if you look at our plaintiffs, one of whom is a Baptist minister who isn't opposed to the Ten Commandments at all, but feels that allowing politicians, and in this case a judge, to co-opt it and diminish the religious significance of the Ten Commandments for the many Oklahomans that incorporated into their sincerely held system of belief, that in and of itself is a violation of their constitutional rights. And so we knew all along that the district court was going to be the first step in this. If the ACLU had prevailed and with our plaintiffs, then the state would have appealed, and we're doing the same at this point.
Neva?
Well, I think I would agree with what Attorney General Scott Pruitt said when he made the comment that the Ten Commandments monument on the grounds basically is constitutional because of historical values. And I think you can point back to the U.S. Supreme Court, a decision back in 2005 that ruled that there was nearly an identical monument to the one that we have on the Oklahoma grounds that is at the Texas State Capitol that was ruled constitutional. So I think this is an instance where, you know, people saying that the process was hijacked by politicians. I mean, the politicians basically are in complete agreement with, I think, a majority of Oklahomans who have no issue at all with this monument and others like it being on state property and grounds.
But, you know, protecting religious rights is inherently trying to protect the rights of religious minorities from the actions of the majority. You know, Justice Breyer, in his concurring opinion, the controlling opinion in the case that you referred to, Neva, he said that that monument was placed over 50 years ago, that a monument placed today in the divisive atmosphere that we currently recognize would almost certainly be ruled unconstitutional. And you know, we can look at it in the context of Representative John Bennett's comments, where he's using religion right now as a political wedge. We've seen the Sharia law prohibition state question that was ultimately overturned, used by politicians as a political wedge, a divisive issue. Religion in the hands of politicians perverts the ends of religion as well as politics.
Well, but one of the things that Judge Prince said, if we want to go back and forth on the kind of the judicial arguments, he said that many of these monuments and plaques depict both the secular and the spiritual history of Oklahoma. And he also referred to the fact that many of these images on the state grounds of these various monuments also have Native American spiritual imagery that exists. So I think there's a clear division of thinking on this. But in this instance, I applaud Judge Prince for his decision.
And while I respectfully disagree with him, I think that he did a good job at the district court level. So.
Is this going to just the state Supreme Court? Do you think it might go all the way to the U.S.?
Well, you know, we're bringing this challenge under the state constitution. There's a separate challenge under the federal constitution brought by another organization, but we're seeking this under the state constitution because it'll go to the state Supreme Court.
Okay. Finally, a fundraiser for U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe is getting more attention than he probably wants. An animal rights group released a fairly graphic video of a pigeon shoot he held in southwest Oklahoma. Neva Inhofe's an incumbent Republican in a state where people have no problem considering this a sport. Does his campaign even need to be concerned with this?
Not at all. And it's really, I mean, it must have been a slow, slow news day for all of these folks to pile on with their news releases. But PETA and the Humane Society coming up with statements like they were shocked by the carnage shown on the video and going on and on about the wanton slaughter of these pigeons. That's not going to get any traction in Oklahoma at all, and frankly, it's not going to get any real attention from a campaign perspective either. These types of shoots go on all the time for political fundraisers, not only in Oklahoma but across the nation. This one just happened to be one that someone decided to focus a little attention and take a couple of shots, metaphorically speaking, at Jim Inhofe.
Ryan, does the Inhofe camp need to be concerned about this?
You know, should they be concerned in the ideal world that I would live in? Yeah, they should be. But in the reality that I'm in, no, they don't need to be concerned about it. I do think that Teddy Roosevelt will be shocked to learn that the hunting prowess of his Republican Party is now best known for a vice president who shot his hunting companion in the face, and a U.S. senator who pretends that pigeon shooting is a sport. You know, the Inhofe campaign did refer back to the fact that this was a sport, a recognized event in the Olympics. I found an article in Mental Floss magazine where it was in one Olympics, and they canceled it because there was outrage against it. You know, people were just blown away by the carnage that they saw at the Olympics, where they were basically shooting small, trapped, disoriented animals at short range, and that's what we have here.
But the NRA, I mean, has made it clear that this is a long-standing traditional shooting sport across the country. This is not unusual, and it's certainly something that's long been accepted here in Oklahoma. So,
which is why they have now clay pigeons, though, instead of real pigeons. Yes, fantastic. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.